across the country and around the world.
Different programs, different points of view.
This is TalkZone.com. Time for more of the Bob Woodson Show, What Works and Why, on TalkZone.com.
We are now joined by Jesse Garcia, youth advisor to the Violence Free Zone worker in South Division High School, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. All three are part of the Latino Community Center's community-based organization in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Welcome, Jesse.
Hey, welcome, Mr. Woodson.
Jesse, can you tell us a little bit about yourself, your background? Mr. Cookshouse said that he was a little shocked when he saw you coming back onto the campus. He didn't know which side you were on. Why would he say that?
South Division was actually one of the first high schools, unfortunately, in my high school tour. And I actually came out of the same neighborhood. South Division is one of the few neighborhood inner-city high schools left in a district like this. And come from the same neighborhood that the school's in. So that was one of the first high schools that I was in. I didn't last there too long, a little bit over a month. And, you know, at the point in time of my life, I wasn't taking responsibility for nothing, gangbanging, running the streets, selling drugs. And just really, I was heading nowhere real fast. And just to fast forward a little bit, you know, thankfully some people came into my life, some experiences that have humbled me. People came into my life that started seeing more in me than I saw myself, that people started to encourage me and tell me that my past didn't have to equal my future. I started taking responsibility for my life. And, when your thinking starts to change, you know, doors start to open for you. People start to enter into your life, you know, stretch your vision, stretch your life, and opportunities present themselves. And I got offered this opportunity, and, you know, it just really made a lot of sense. You know, I knew what this high school environment was before I even heard about this program in that high school. I mean, this was a gang-infested high school. I mean, this was probably one of the, you know, the worst high schools you can go to as far as when I was going there dealing with the gangbanging issues. And at one point in time, I was part of that problem, you know, and it's been an honor and a blessing to work with the type of people that we've been fortunate to work with, like Mr. Cookshouse and Andre and Amelia and a lot of the other South Division staff, you know, just to go back into that environment and be able to help build what I once helped tear down.
And Jesse, tell me what the response of the children. You've been a real leader in terms of redirecting other gang members. What is the response to the children, and what kind of response do they get from you when you first come? And give me some examples of how you've been able to reduce violence. What is the strategy of intervening? In other words, if a child comes to you and says that I'm afraid to go to class, a math class on the second floor because five boys from the Mexican posse are waiting for me. What do you do or say to a child like that?
Listen, first off, like when we first got there, you know, some of the students knew of me before I even got to the school. Those relationships kind of co-signed my existence in the building, you know, just from people knowing me in the streets. And you know, you got to find leverage. First off, you got to build relationships. You know, we were just observing on who were the students that had the most influence, and our goal was, you know, to get in their corner, you know, get some kind of leverage with them, you know, and you know, I just focused on building relationships with those that had the most influence, you know, and when it came time to, you know, when things were getting kind of rowdy, you know, then I pulled that card with them, you know, like, listen, you know, remember I looked out for you right here, all right, well, I need your help right here, I need you guys to kill this, you know, make sure that this gets squashed, you know, and some of the things that we've done.
So in other words, what I understand is that if you have a population of students, let's say of 1,000 students, that they are influenced by 10%, and that 10% by yet another 10%. So in other words, from what I understand, what you do and Amelia and the others is go into the school, and how do you identify the leadership among young people? Although it's negative, and you try to convert it to positive, but how do you reach these young? How do you identify them?
Well, really don't take too long. You know, you just sit back and you watch, you know, see who's talking the most, you know, see who everybody's listening to in the crowd, see who's the most popular in the crowd, you know, and those are usually the ones that have the most influence. You know, I kind of take a different approach, you know. I don't beat around the bush with these kids, you know, and a lot of these kids have a lot of baggage, you know, they're already going through stuff. Most of them don't come, you know, most of them are coming from broken families, you know. And I keep it real with these kids. I talk to them, you know, real on a level that where they can understand and they can relate with me.
And what is it that that you get out of it, Jesse, when you help kids like this? We've speak an awful lot about giving to kids, but what do you get back from them?
Well, you know, this has probably been one of the most rewarding things I've ever done in my life. Just the opportunity to see people grow, you know, opportunity to see that, I have a part, you know, if I play my position, I have a part in changing somebody's life. You know, these kids, you know, sometimes when you're, you know, the environments they're being exposed to, you know, they can't see 2 years down the road. They can't see 5 years down the road. And you know how I know that is because I was asked that question a couple years ago. Like, where do you see your life 5 years from now? And, you know, embarrassingly, I couldn't even answer that question. And a lot of these kids, you know, we would like to think that they're thinking about college. You know, but a lot of them can't even see themselves outside their own neighborhood. Because at one point in time, I didn't see myself outside my own neighborhood because I'd never been outside my own neighborhood. And that was all I've ever been exposed to. I've never traveled outside of my neighborhood. And, you know, I had a lid on my life. And to just be able to think that, you know, by my encouragement and by me being available to them and me helping them get through some of their life's obstacles, you know, that, you know, I can have a part in them getting out their own way and them starting to give themselves permission to have the kind of success that is for them to have.
Tell me some examples of what change you've seen in kids. What kind of transformation? Can you give us some examples of some things you've done and what response that maybe surprised you?
Well, you know, when I'm usually sitting down with kids, you know, I'm having one-on-one conversations, I'm asking a lot of questions. You know, I'm trying to get down to their core, you know, like what is motivating them if they even have anything that's motivating them? And I try to find out what is the reason why they have to finish high school. There was one particular young lady that I've been working with that told me, you know, she comes from a real unstable household, and she was like, you know what, I just really want to move out of my mom's house. I can't live in this environment like this no more. You know, I'm not happy at home. I'm like, okay, well, this is what you need to be doing then. You can't afford to be in the hall. You can't afford to be smoking weed and hanging out, skipping school. I'm like, what is your reason why you have to finish high school? She said, to get out of my mama's crazy house. Those are her exact words. Wow. So when I would see this young lady in the hall or I would see her kind of slipping up, I would remind her of what she told me. You know, I was like, wait a minute. I thought you said you wanted to get out your mama's crazy house. And it would instantly trigger, you know, that was like the trigger that would remind her of what she was supposed to be doing, you know, and it helped, you know, and I would use that as leverage because she gave me permission to, because that's what she told me. And, you know, it would work, you know, and I kind of seen little things like that. But usually digging, asking a lot of questions, you know, will reveal a lot of things to you that can help you when it comes to moving these students along.
I'd like to ask Amelia that same question, just what she gets out of or has gotten out of the encounter. And also, Amelia has done something, led an effort that's very, very unique in terms of reaching parents through their income tax. Could you share that with us, Amelia?
What we started with VFD is trying to enhance have some economic impact in some of the homes of these kids that we're working with. We already know what types of neighborhoods that they're coming from and what their financial backgrounds are. So in order to kind of reconnect with some of the parents and kind of give these kids an extra trust leverage of the VFD staff, we incorporated a program called the VITA program, which is a program that is sponsored by the Internal Revenue Service. And they provide us with the software and the training skills to train our youth advisors to prepare income taxes for the families. And we start at the school in the evening times, and we open up our services to all of the students, to some teachers, and to parents of the students that attend South Division High School. But a step further, we also open it up to just the community in itself. Even if they don't have students that attend South Division, it's open to anyone who's in that community or that area that would come in and receive free income tax services.
So how much money has been returned to the community as a consequence of your effort over the last 2 years?
Last year, we brought back $1.7 million in returns of everybody's money that included the earned income credit, child tax credit, and the energy credits and everything that is offered by IRS.
Wow. In other words, many of these are non-filers then.
A lot.
And what you've done is going out and encouraging. What impact has it had on your relationship, the parents' relationship with the children? I mean, we hear a lot about the apathy of parents, but I would imagine something like this would help to solidify the program's relationship with the parents.
Well, it does solidify relationships because the parents begin to trust youth advisors and the school because they believe that this is a service, that we're out there to help them and that we're not out there to get them. So it gives them that extra leverage of trust, and they are actually very much more connected to the school because now they've been in there, they know somebody in there, they are more likely to ask questions, more likely to come back to the building for other programs and other parent services. So it really connects the parents back into the school.
Right. And Mr. Cook's house, how did other principals in the system react when they heard what was going on in the South? I know the program started modestly in your school, South Division, and now it has expanded. According to Superintendent Andrikopoulos, the program has now expanded to 8 high schools, now funded $1.7 million by the school board and $500,000 from private foundations in the city. What has been the reaction to other principals?
A lot of the other principals would call me because they really weren't sure what the whole program was all about, and they were wondering, what is this thing? Is this something I want? And so really, it was more just informational. I told them my experiences, told them what we did here, and the bulk of the people who, you know, that I spoke with, then, you know, welcomed it in. It was just, some people are always a little skeptical about something new, and the principal has so much on their plate. You know, they don't really know what they're supposed to be involved in. Are they supposed to direct it? And one of the things that I kept telling them is these people from the violence-free zone, at least the ones I had experience with, were so motivated, so quality individuals, that you don't have to worry about finding things for them to do. In my school, I mean, they ran. They came in and they ran with the ball. They would come to me and say, here's what we want to do next. Here's what we want to do next. And as a principal, I loved that. The fact that I didn't have to try to find things for them to do and work them in, you know, it was a real motivated group and had a lot of ideas, a lot of, you know, some things, even in my role, I was a little skeptical, but I said, let's go, let's try it. So it was informational and just giving them examples of my experiences.
So, you know, it's just interesting that that a lot of the ideas, the strategies, such as the income tax return program, the reduction of tardiness and hall monitoring and a number of other innovations have all emanated from the bottom up. Right. But normally, when we think about solving social problems, we think about well-intentioned professional who are designing solutions who are then parachuted into those schools, and then staff are recruited to carry out these mandates from others. But what I hear in this show is that most of the program and the improvements are being driven by the youth advisors and by the local operating organizations that are bringing their innovative experience to the school, and then blending that with the traditional education and services that are being. Is that a fair assessment of the process that is going on here?
I think so. And what I told people is what happened is we got an additional layer of intervention. A lot of the things that the VFC workers do, you know, we would have liked to have done. Teachers always have certain kids that they connect with, our social workers, the safety, every adult. But because teachers have 5 classes to teach, because safety's got the other responsibilities and duties they have to have, and the assistant principals and administrators, you know, we've got things. We just didn't have the time and the energy for doing a proper layer of intervention. And that's what I got with the violence-free zone. I got another group of people who could take over where we were lacking. I mean, and we try. Everybody in that building works hard, and everybody's adopted a couple kids. I know that. But here was another group that came in and kind of filtered in and touched kids that some of us couldn't get to. And I just wanted to say, too, that my experience with the workers at South Division, you know, they're very pragmatic group, and they're real. They would occasionally, not often, but they would occasionally come and say, you know, there's a kid that we've been working with, and you're not going to change everybody, and at this point in time, that child isn't going to change. We need to find a new placement for him. And I had such a trust in their judgment on those issues that the few times that they would come to me with that, I would do what I had to do to put that person in a different educational environment. So it's a pragmatic view. And it's a view of what are we going to do to keep that school calm, keep it orderly, and inevitably, you know, educate the kids, get them moving on, move on with their life. So that's the ultimate goal.
One big issue, of course, facing school system was a high level of suspensions. And I know Milwaukee, Wisconsin, about 2 years ago, was cited as having the highest suspension rates of any school in the nation. And it was criticized about that. But I understand that all of that has changed now. What's your comment about that?
Well, it is changing. I think about 4 years ago, we were a runner-up as a safe high school. And the week before the head of MPS safety, I think the mayor was at school at that time, who handed us the award. A week before that, I was in a meeting where we were kind of getting berated for our high suspensions. And so at that time, I said, hey, you know, these two are kind of connected. But once I had people who had the time and ability and the motivation, like I say, what a great group of motivated workers we have, we could look at our suspensions. And we started saying, some of these suspensions, you know, when you fight, I'm sorry, but you have to go. If you bring drugs into school, I'm sorry, but you have to go. There are some things that have to be. But when we looked at it, we were having huge suspensions for tardiness, for these kids that hall walk. One of the hardest things in my experience is getting the kids into the classroom. You know, they love that social thing in the halls, and when the bell rings, they just don't want to go to class. Sometimes I understand it. I can empathize with them. But, you know, getting them out of these halls, getting them into the classroom. So a lot of suspensions came from that. And so now where we actually reduce a lot of our suspensions is in the fact that we put in some programs to address the tardy to school, tardy to class, the hall walkers, in a different way, you know, rather than, okay, this is your third time in the hall, you're going home for a couple of days. So that was a big part of it, of where we ended up. And then, like I say, the proactive part of the program, kids would talk to violence free zone workers in a different manner than they would even speak to me. And you know, I love the kids, and a lot of the kids, I think, felt real comfortable with me. But the end result is they see me as being the person in charge of the school. So they're not going to come to me and say, you know, I think somebody's bringing drugs. I think that there's going to be a fight. You know, even though I did connect with kids in a real way and still to this day have contacts with them, you know, I'm the official. I'm the school official. So sometimes they were a little hesitant to tell me things that they would tell some of the workers. And then once we got the information, we could put in some policies or procedures or do something to try to prevent something we wouldn't have known about in another realm.
Our guest today has been Mark Cookshouse, former principal of South Division High School in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, Andre Robinson, who is the overall program director of the Violence Free Zone for Latino Community Center, and Amelia Stuckart and Jesse Garcia of the Latino Community Center in Milwaukee Southside. We've been talking about how one school had a remarkable transformation from violence and disruption to calm and education. Next week, we will continue to explore some more issues underlying the problems of youth violence and talk to some more of the people who are producing some amazing results in reducing violence in some of the nation's most troubled schools and communities. I'm Bob Woodson, president of the Center for Neighborhood Enterprise. Please join me next week at 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. To listen to the show and access past programs, go to cneonline.org and click on the radio icon. If you'd like to comment on the show or send us some story ideas, please email us at bobwoodsonshow@cneonline.org. Or if you want to give us a call at 202-518-6500, that's 202-518-6500, we'd love to hear from you. Thank you for joining us, and we hope that you will be with us next week on The Bob Woodson Show, What Works and Why.
You've been listening to The Bob Woodson Show, What Works and Why, insights and solutions to some of America's most troubling societal problems, featuring community activist Robert L. Woodson Sr. To learn more, visit cneonline.org. And join us next time for more of The Bob Woodson Show, right here on TalkZone.com.